Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Baba Kama Daf Ayin. We are holding at the top of Daf Ayin Amud Aleph with Amri Naharda. It's just to review a little bit. The Gemara had posed potential stiros within Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan's din that Gezel Baloni Siashu Abaylim. If somebody steals an animal from somebody and the owner, the original owner, doesn't yet give up hope of recovering the animal, then neither person, neither the thief nor the person who owns the object, can be makdish the animal as a korban. The person who owns it, even though it's his, can't because it's not in his rishus. And the person who stole it also can't be makdish it because it doesn't belong to him. So the Gemara is just going to continue with the related discussion to that din of Rabbi Yochanan. Then, beginning with the Mishnah, we're going to have a bunch of cases of tavach u'machar, cases where a thief stole an animal and then shechted it or stole it, and whether they would be chayv to pay arba v'chamisha mostly, maybe also a little discussion of kefel, or whether they would not be, depending on the circumstances. So let's begin at the top of Daf Ayin Amud Aleph, Amri Nardai. So Amri Nardai, lo kadvinan orachta, I saw there's a girsa of adrachta amataltali. Adrachta or orachta is basically a concept called harsha. And what the Chachamim of Narda are telling us here is that we can't write a harsha on something for an object, which is just a material possession, just metaltalin, an inanimate object, just a chayfet, an object. What exactly is going on here? So a harsha, essentially, is you're writing a document to give a person the ability, the rights, to go claim something from somebody else. So let's say somebody has your object that they're holding on to, and you want to give it to some third party, so you can write a document which enables that third party to go to the person who has your object and take it from him. Now, in what circumstances would this arise? So Tosus here, Dibur Machil, Lokat Vinan, Orachta, Amataltali, says, what type of object are we talking about? How did this object come into the possession of the second person who's holding on to it? So Tosus says, Davka Amataltalin de Gazle. We're dealing specifically with an object that was stolen from you, and the person who's holding on to it is a thief, and you're going to write a harsha to some other person to go get that object for you, or to get that object for themselves if you owe it to them. Aval metaltalin de pikadon kadvinan. But, says Tosos, we would be able to write a harsha for an object that was just given over as collateral. If you gave the object to somebody either to watch for you or as collateral on a security, then you would be able to write a harsha to somebody else to go and collect that object. Why? Dahatali taima behekdish. Because, as we're going to see, the Gemara is going to relate this din to Rabbi Yochanan. V'yesh koach la'adam lahakdish pikadon sh'yesh lo b'yad chaver. The whole din relates to Rabbi Yochanan's case of whether you can be makdish an animal that's not in your possession. And we know that you can be makdish collateral. If you have an object which is only a pikadon that is in the possession of somebody else, it wasn't stolen, they're just holding on to it for you, you could be makdish such an object. So Tosus assumes, if as we're going to see in a second, this whole thing is based on Rabbi Yochanan, then it wouldn't apply to a case of pikadon, a case where you give an object as a collateral, because there Rabbi Yochanan wouldn't apply. But it would apply to a case where the object was stolen, because there Rabbi Yochanan
applies. You've done this a few times already. You've called the pikadon collateral.
As opposed to, could it not also be? Meaning, no. Pikadon versus mashkon, that's the chilek that you're drawing?
Pikadon is not a mashkon either. Pikadon is a deposit.
No, that's what I'm saying. You're saying a mashkon would be a collateral and a pikadon would be just an object that somebody's watching for you?
A pikadon is something is watching for
Does
you.
Does pikadon not also come up in the context of a collateral?
I've never heard that.
Oh, I thought it does. I could be wrong.
I could be wrong too, but I've never heard of pikadon.
Okay, interesting. So no, I definitely need to be more sensitive to that. Yeah, it could be that I'm just
because totally a collateral might not be. You might not have so many rights with collateral. With collateral, you're giving someone collateral for a loan, and it's like the loan is being paid off with that collateral. You may not have so much jurisdiction over it.
No, so I hear the distinction that you're drawing. If I'm not mistaken, I think that pikadon is also used in the context of collateral sometimes. I could be wrong, but I definitely appreciate what you're raising, and I need to be more sensitive to that. So it could be fine. Yeah. It could be pikadon is only an object that that somebody's watching for you, but not that's being used as collateral. Although I do think that in some of the sugyas, like you have the case where either you lend money to a nachri and he gives you chametz as collateral for it, that's or he lends to you. Right. And I think the lashon of pikadon may come up in those contexts or in other contexts. I could be wrong. But definitely worth being sensitive to. So I appreciate
Keep
that.
Keep an eye out.
Yeah, 100%. Thank you. I appreciate that. So I'm trying to be fine. But so let's get. So let's get back to harsha for a second. So that was the din that Narda tells us. You can't write a harsha to give somebody the rights to go collect an object for you.
But then you can demand at any time, and he has to give it to you.
Right.
Collateral, you can't do that.
Because you have to pay back.
You have to pay back.
Right. Yeah. No, 100%. I hear what you're saying. I have to, consider that more. So fine. So that's what the Narada tells us, that you can't write a harsha on an object. So Amar Ravashi Lameimar, my time. Why is it that you can't write a harsha for an object? Why can't you grant the rights to somebody to go collect an object? So Amar Le Mishum de Rabbi Yochanan, as we've been alluding to, the reason you can't write a harsha on an object is because of this din of Rabbi Yochanan that we've been discussing. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Gezel Balonis Yashu Abaylim, Shneem Einan Yecholim Lahakdish. Zel Lefi She'enu Shelo, Vezel Lefi She'enu Bishu. So, because Rabbi Yochanan told us that if an animal is stolen from somebody and the owner has not given up hope of recovering the animal, neither person, neither party can be makdish this animal. The person from whom it was stolen cannot be makdish it because it's no longer in his possession, and the person who stole it cannot be makdish it because it's not his. So says Rashi, how does Rabbi Yochanan relate to a case of harsha? What does stealing an animal have to do with giving somebody the rights to collect an object for you? So Rashi says, Mishum de Rabbi Yochanan, Dehoel ve'eno birshus habaylim, eno yachol aknoso lish aliyach. What Rabbi Yochanan basically teaches us, and as it applies to harsha, is that since the object that you're writing this harsha on is not in your possession, it's in the other person's possession, you can't be makne, you can't grant it to the shaliach, you can't give it over to him through this harsha. And therefore, you would not be able to write a harsha on metaltalin. That's the first explanation for this din of Narada. Now, there is an alternative girsa or statement of what Narada actually said. Ika de Amri Naradai, lo katvinan orachta am metaltali de kafre. The alternative version of Narada is that you can't write a harsha, you can't write a document giving somebody the rights to collect an object for you, specifically if it's an object that you claimed from the person who's holding on to it and he was kofer. He claimed that he doesn't have that object. That's the only situation in which you can't write a harsha on an object. But if you just had a regular object which you did not claim from the person and the person did not deny possession of, potentially you would be able to write a harsha on it. And that's exactly what the Gemara spells out right now. Taima de kafre de mirsi kishikra avalo kafre katvinan. The reason that you can't write an orachta, you can't write a harsha on these metaltalin, is because you claimed it from the other person and he denied the claim. And therefore, if you write a harsha granting it to some other party, it looks like false. It's michzi kishikra. It looks like you gave him the rights to some object which doesn't really exist because the person you're claiming has it completely denied that claim. But if the person did not deny that claim, avalo kafre, if you claimed it from him and he did not deny it, or you never claimed and he never denied, then you would be able to write a harsha for such an object. So that's how the first version of Narada and the second version of Narada would differ. The first version of Narada would say you can never write a harsha on an object. The second version of Narada would say you can only not write a harsha on an object that you claimed and the claim was denied. But if you never claimed or the claim wasn't denied, then you would be able to write a harsha. And then there would also be the difference in explanation. According to the first version, the reason you can't write a harsha on metaltalin is because of Rabbi Yochanan, Gezel, and Otsiashu Abaylim. According to the second version of Narada, the reason you can't write a harsha on this very specific type of object, one you claim from the person and he denied, is because it would be michzi kishikra. So now the Gemara continues on with other dinim related to harsha. But Amri Narada, Narada also taught us another teaching about harsha, and that is orachta de loktivbe zil don vezachi ba'apek v'nafshecha leis ba mishasha. A harsha in which you don't write the following language: zil, don, vezachi, go and be done, adjudicate this case, and emerge victorious, merit, emerge with the rights out of this case, ba'apik l'nafshecha, and be able to take the property that I'm giving to you in this harsha from the other person. If the person does not write this specific language in the harsha, then leis ba mishasha, then it has no significance, it has no value, it has no power. My taima, mishim de amr le ha'eich, lav badvarim didi'a. Because if you don't write this language into the harsha, then the person from which the shliach, the person that you're sending out with this harsha to get the object, the person from which you're claiming, can just respond to the shliach and say, you're not the party that I'm supposed to be dealing with in this case. I'm supposed to be dealing with the person who sent you, not with you. And he didn't give you any rights to adjudicate this case for yourself, for him. So you have no business dealing with me. And therefore, this harsha would be completely invalid if it doesn't have this language included in it. Amar Abaye, v'iksiv be lemechza lishlish v'leravia, if the harsha doesn't necessarily say that the shliach, the person you're sending out with the harsha, has the rights to adjudicate the entire case, but it does mention that he has the rights to deal with this object that we're dealing with, either up to half of the value, or a third of the value, or a quarter of the value, if he has some rights in this case, albeit not complete rights, then migo de mishtai dini apalga mishtai dina akula. then we can apply the MIGO principle and say that because he has the rights to deal with some fraction of this case, whether a quarter or a third or a half, he has the rights to deal with the entire case. And the person who's holding on to the object cannot say, Lav bal dvarim didiya, you have no business dealing with me, or at least you have no business dealing with me on the remaining fraction, which you don't have rights to, because of this principle of MIGO, since he has rights to a fraction of it, he has rights to deal with the entire case. Now, Amar HaMeimar, itafas lo mafkinan mine. So says HaMeimar, if somebody grabs the object, then we can't remove the object from him. So Rashi here has two deyas, what we mean, itafas lo mafkinan mine. The first day, let's see Rashi, Dibra Machil B'Tafas, it's the top third of Rashi. B'Tafas Shliach Mishal Ne'aman. If the person that you sent out with the Harsha is Tofes the object, he takes it from the person he's supposed to claim it from, and then seemingly he holds onto it and doesn't give it back to the person who sent him, Lo Mafkin Amine. Af Agav De Loksiv Be Apek L'Nafshecha. Then we cannot remove the possession from the Shliach who was sent with the Harsha, even though the Harsha didn't say that he's allowed to take the object for himself.
I thought it has to say that.
So it has to say that, it sounds like. That would presumably be in a case where you're giving the person with the Harsha the rights to collect it for himself. Meaning he's not going to collect it on your behalf. He's going to collect it on his own behalf. Okay. So if you... Presumably, that's the case where you would say apik l'nafshecha. But if he's collecting on your behalf, not on his own, then you probably wouldn't say v'apik l'nafshecha. He's really being v'apik, you know, li. He's trying to take it out on your behalf. So according to this first day in Rashi, what's happening is the shliach was not given the rights to collect it for himself. He was supposed to be collecting for the person who sent him. And yet if he takes it and holds on to it and won't give it back and he wants to claim it for himself, lo mafkina minay, and that's even though he doesn't have the rights to take it for himself, even though he was only sent to take it for the sender, right, still we can't remove it from his property. That's the first lashon Rashi, but Rashi's not going to like that. Lishna achrina, v'itafas shliach mamon shehotzi, v'ikvo la'atzmo, lo mafkina minay, kach matzati kata, v'tshuvas hageonim, v'zeh ikr. So the second day in Rashi is saying, if the shliach takes the mamon, the object that he was supposed to take from the person who had it. So the way these two Rashis differ, it seems like in both cases we're saying that the person with the harsha is holding on to the object. So really what the first day was saying is not that you took the object you were given the harsha for, but you took something else that belonged to the person who had the object. You took something else from his property that you would not be able to hold, that you would be able to hold on to. We couldn't take it back from the person who had the harsha. And the second day is that the person with the harsha took the object itself that he was given permission to take, not on his own behalf, but on behalf of the person who sent him. If he holds on to that and won't give it back, that's something that you can't take from him. And Rashi says, Ze'ikr, seemingly that makes more sense because presumably the object that we're talking about here is the object that the person was sent for, so not some other object.
What do you do with him?
What do you do with him? So it sounds like lo mafkina minay, and he just wins. He has the rights because you gave him this harsha, and he goes to deal on your behalf. And even if he holds on to a property, shelo kedin, that he wasn't supposed to, he's not entitled to do that, but there's nothing we can do about it. We can't penalize him for that. But that's only according to HaMeimar. Rav Ashi says, Kevan de kaspele kol de misani mindina kvilas alei shliach shavya. Rav Ashi says, no. Since the person who sent the shliach, the person who wrote to Harsha, basically gave him the rights to do whatever he wants. And he said, anything that emerges from your dealing with this other party, I'm basically accepting on myself, even though I can't necessarily predict what's going to happen. But I'm accepting all risks that may emerge from this. Therefore, he's a shliach, and in some way, but he's a shliach, and therefore he's only doing the desires of the person who sent him, and therefore we could actually remove the property. He can't keep it. Right? Let's see Rashi. Kevan dechtiv kabilas alai alma shliach shavya hilkach itafis mafkinan min. Since he appointed him as a shliach, then if he removes the property, we can take it from him. So we're disagreeing with HaMeimar. HaMeimar says itafis lo mafkinan min. If the person who sent him to Harsha seizes it, there's nothing we can do about it, and he keeps it. But Rashi says no, he's a shliach on behalf of the person who sent him, and therefore of course we could take it out. That's according. Rashi says that's according to the second lashon, the second explanation which Rashi gave, which he thought was ikr, which is that the person is trying to hold on onto the object that the Harshal was written about. Lishna kama nami itafas mishal ne'eman mafkina mine tashliach be'almahu v'havi ketofes l'balchov. And Rashi says you can even understand this line according to the first Lashon, which Rashi didn't like, but obviously that Lashon is going to have to be able to explain the Gemara. So according to the first Lashon, that the shliach was stealing some other property from the person who was holding on to the main object, the object for which the Harshal was written about, but the shliach came and took something else from the ne'eman, so still we could remove that property from him because the person who wrote the Harsha at the end of the day was just appointing him as a shliach, and therefore he has no rights to hold on to this object. Ve'ike de'amar shutfa shabe. There's another explanation, another version within Ravashi, which is that the person who wrote the Harsha was not sending the Bursha, the person who received the Harsha, as a shliach, but rather he was sending him or appointing him as a shutaf, as a partner in business. And says the Gemara, l'may nafkamina, l'mitpas palga. What's the difference between whether he was sent as a shliach or whether he was sent as a shutaf? The difference is whether he could hold on to half of it. Meaning, if he was just sent as a shliach, if he's completely, you know, an agent of the person who sent him, then he can't hold on to any of it. But if he's a partner, then technically he's entitled to some of it, and he could hold on to half of it, right? Rashi says, l'mitpas palga, mamon shehevi imrotza la'akev chatzio. If he wants to hold on to half of the property, half of the possessions that he took out from the rishus of the ne'eman, he would be entitled to do so. But at the end of the day, the halacha is that he's a shliach shavya, that he appointed him only as an agent, but not as a partner. So seemingly what we're saying is we would paskin like Rav Ashi, that we could remove the object from the murshus possession, and also that he's considered a shliach, not a shutaf, and therefore we can't just remove half of it, we could actually remove the entire property that this person seized. He has no right to do that because he was sent as an agent from the person who wrote the Harsha, and he cannot seize this property. So that's essentially the short discussion of Harsha that appears here in Bava Kamma. This is a massive sugya, obviously a very difficult and complicated sugya. One of my chavrusas mentioned that they were studying the sugya of Harsha in Rabbi Rosenzweig's shiur in Yeshiva University, back when they were learning Bava Kamma, a few years back. And I believe it was when they were learning Sanhedrin, they had like 11 different shitos about what exactly a harsha can accomplish. So obviously a wide range of what harsha has the ability to do. Definitely a technical sugya, but that's just a small insight into the sugya that appears here in Bava Kamma. So let's continue on with the Mishnah. Ganav al pishnayim betavach umachar al pihem. Now we're returning to our discussion of a person who steals an animal and then either shechs it or sells it. So let's say a person steals from somebody with two eidim, and then he either shechs the animal or he sells the animal, al pihem, and there are two eidim, the same two eidim are there to testify, the same two eidim who testify that he stole are also there to testify that he either shechted it or sold it, oh, al pishnayim acherim, or the tficho mechira, the shechting or the sale, happened with the testimony of two different eidim, not the same eidim who testified that he stole it, but two other eidim. Meshalim tashlume arba v'chamisha. Still, in both of these cases, you would have to pay arba v'chamisha. If it's the same eidim, that makes a lot of sense because we're using the same eidim to testify about both actions, the gneva, the theft, and also the tficho mechira, the sale or the shechting. But the chiddush of the Mishnah is basically that even if there are different eidim testifying about the tficho mechira, you would still have to pay arba v'chamisha, and the Gemara is going to explain why that is. Similarly, ganav u'machar b'Shabbos. Let's say you steal and sell the animal on Shabbos, or ganav u'machar l'avodah zarah. Let's say you steal and sell the animal to avodah zarah. Ganav etavach b'yom ha-kippurim. Let's say you steal the animal and shecht it on Yom Kippur. Ganav mishal aviv etavach u'machar v'achar kach meis aviv. Let's say you steal the animal from your father, and then you shecht the animal or sell it, and then your father dies. Or ganav v'tavach v'achar kach hektish, or you steal the animal and shecht it, and then you're makdish the animal afterwards. In all of these cases, meshalim tashlume arba v'chamisha. Despite the fact that there's some other element included in all these cases, whether it was Shabbos or avodah zarah or Yom Kippur, or it belonged to your father, or you were makdish it, nonetheless, in all these cases, you'll still have to pay arba v'chamisha. And the Gemara is going to get into all these cases and discuss first of all why you'd be obligated, and second of all how if they might differ just a little bit. Let's say, for example, the case where you steal the animal and you shecht it or sell it, and then your father dies afterwards. So Rashi points out that if your father were to die before you shecht it, before you sold it, you would not be obligated to pay four times or five times. Why not? Because when your father died, you would have inherited the property from him. So it would be your own. Shalohu tavach v'shalohu mochar. I mean, you wouldn't be obligated to pay arba v'chamisha. But in all these exceptional cases of tashlume arba v'chamisha, even though there's some...
What about kefil?
Kefel, presumably you would still be obligated to pay because at the time that you stole it, it wasn't yours, right?
Under what circumstances are you potter from dalad v'hei, but you steal from your father?
Well, there. So the circumstance. Let's see, Rashi. V'tabachu machar v'achar kach meisaviv. Right, Rashi says the case of the Mishnah was a case where you stole the animal, you shechted it or sold it, and then your father died. And the Mishnah had said that you'd be obligated to pay abba v'chamisha. So Rashi says aval meisaviv v'achar kach tabachu machar. But if your father first died after you stole it, but before you shechted it and before you sold it, and then you shechted it and sold it, tana b'seifa de pater. We're going to see in a later Mishnah that you'd be pater in such a case. Why? Sharei yaresh es aviv v'shelo hu tovei achu mocher.
So the same should apply for kefil.
But why? When you stole it from your father, it was his, not yours. So you should be chayv kefil. Maybe you'll say you'll inherit the kefil payment. Yeah, is that what you're trying to say? Yeah. Oh, so that could be. Yeah. That could be. Right. So I guess the question is, how do you look at that?
And the Karen as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess the question is, how do you look at an obligation that you should have had to pay, meaning really you're obligated, but you just inherit whatever payment you would have had to make. So are you really completely putter, or is it that, you know, technically you were obligated, it's just that there's nothing we require you to do because whatever money you're going to pay would just be transferred right back to you. Meaning in terms of the strict letter of the law, if your father were to die before you shech, before you sell, then you're completely exempt because it doesn't even fit the parameters of the Torah. It's not that you're obligated, but you inherit the payment. There was never a chiyuv to begin with. Right, exactly. Because shelo hutaveach shelo mocher, we can't, you know, kari kan, you know, utvacho o mecharo, if we try to assess whether or not this person shechted or sold an animal that wasn't his, the answer would be no. But so in all of these cases, which the Gemara is going to deal with, you would have to pay arba v'chamisha. Ganav v'tavach l'refua o l'klavim. Let's say you steal the animal and you shecht it, either l'refua, to be used for some sort of medication for somebody, or you shecht it to feed to klavim, meaning you're not going to use the meat of the animal for just a normal purpose of eating, but you're either going to use it for l'refua, to heal somebody, or to feed your dogs. Or hashochi v'nimtzeis treifa. Let's say you shecht the animal and it turns out that it was a treifa, so meaning the animal was essentially already dead. We treated treifa as being a dead animal, even though it's alive. So when you shechted it, it's not as if you really shechted the animal. Or hashoche chulin ba'asara, if you shecht an animal, but you shechted as chulin ba'asara, there's a prohibition against shechting a normal animal inside the Beis HaMikdash in the Azara. So if you shecht this animal that you stole in such a way, in all of these cases, mishalim tashlume arba v'chamisha. In all these cases, you would still have to pay arba v'chamisha, again, even though there is this exceptional condition going on in the case. And Rabbi Shimon poter b'shnei elu, Rabbi Shimon is poter in these two cases. What are these two cases? The last two cases. Either hashochei v'nimtzeis treifa, if you shecht the animal and it turns out to be a treifa, or hashochei chulin ba'azara, you shecht chulin in the azara. In both of these cases, Rabbi Shimon would not require you to pay arba v'chamisha. Why not? So as Rashi explains, because Rabbi Shimon holds consistently throughout Shas that shechita she'ina re'uya lav shma shechita, that a shechita which is not a proper shechita, which is not a shechita that makes the animal kosher, is not considered a shechita. So if you shecht chulin ba'azara, which is a prohibition, you're not allowed to do that, or you shecht the animal and it's considered and it's found to be a treifa, so it's not a kosher animal, you wouldn't be chayav for the payment of four times or five times, because that's not utvacho mechara. You didn't technically shecht the animal since it was a shechita she'ina re'uya.
She'ina re'uya means it's not allowed or it's not fit to be eaten?
I think both would qualify as a shechita she'ina re'uya. Yeah. Okay, good. So let's continue on with the Gemara. The Gemara is now referring to the first case in the Mishnah of ganav al pishnayim v'tavach mechara piyim o al pishnayim acherim. That you stole an animal with the testimony of two witnesses, and then you either shechted the animal or sold the animal with the testimony of the same two witnesses or with two different witnesses. So says the Gemara, Lema masnisin de lo k'Rabbi Akiva. Maybe this Mishnah, which obligates you to pay arba v'chamisha in those cases that we just mentioned, is not like Rabbi Akiva. De'i Rabbi Akiva, ha'amar davar v'lo chatzi davar. Because if it accorded with the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva holds davar v'lo chatzi davar. We know that Edim have to testify about a matter, about a davar, and we darshan that means they're not allowed to testify about a chatzi davar. They can't testify, at least not properly, about half of a matter. And this case in the Mishnah, where you steal on the basis of two Edim's testimony, and then you shecht or sell on the basis of the testimony of two other Edim, that would seem to be chatzi davar. They can't combine for these two things, both of which are required to obligate you to pay four times or five times. D'tanya, where do we know this position of Rabbi Akiva from? Because we have in this braisa, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Kishahalach Abba Chalafta, Etzel Rabbi Yochanan Benuri Lumotora, Rabbi Yossi reported that when Abba Chalafta, which Rashi on the next page tells us is the name of the father of Rabbi Yossi, when Rabbi Yossi's father went to learn Torah by Rabbi Yochanan Benuri, the Amrila Rabbi Yochanan Benuri Etzel Abba Chalafta, or a different version is when Rabbi Yochanan Benuri went to learn by Abba Chalafta, by Rabbi Yossi's father, Amar lo, Harei she'achla shana rishona bifnei shnayim, shnia bifnei shnayim, shlishis bifnei shnayim, mahu. The following question was posed when they were learning together. Let's say a person is trying to make a chazakah on a field. So he needs to basically use the field, eat the produce of the field for 3 years. And let's say that he makes a proper chazakah in all 3 years, but he has different edim testifying about each year that he was machzik in the field. He has two edim testifying that he was machzik in the first year, and two different edim testifying that he was machzik in the second year, and two different edim testifying that he was machzik in the third year. So would such a case constitute a chazakah? So Amar lo, hareza chazakah, and whoever was being posed the question answered that such a chazakah would be a chazakah. So then the person who posed the question responded and said, Amar lo, afani omer ken. He says, I agree, I think that should be a chazakah. At the end of the day, you have Adam testifying that you were machzik for 3 years, so that should be a proper chazakah. Elish Rabbi Akiva cholik bedavar. But Rabbi Akiva, who we were just discussing his opinion, he disagrees. Shehaya Rabbi Akiva omer, davar velo chatzi davar. Because Rabbi Akiva holds davar velo chatzi davar. The Gemara, they quote here the pasuk for us, that al pishnayim edim, o al pishlosha edim, yakum davar, that a matter has to be, you know, adjudicated, or testimony has to be given on the basis of two edim or three edim, and it has to be yakum davar, it has to be a whole matter. And so we learn that you can't have testimony about only half a matter. So Abba Chalafta and Rabbi Yochanan Benuri are in agreement here that such a chazakah, where two edim are testifying about the first year, and two about the second, and two about the third, would be a good chazakah. And they're just noting that Rabbi Akiva disagrees. He holds that such a case would constitute a chatzi davar. Why? Because what's considered significant in a halacha, what's considered a davar, is a chazakah of 3 years. So you need edim testifying about a chazakah of 3 years. But if you have different edim testifying about a chazakah of 1 year, so in essence, each set of edim is testifying that you weren't machzik. The first people are saying you're only machzik for 1 year, that's not a chazakah. The second edim are saying you're only machzik 1 year, that's not a chazakah. And the third edim also are saying you're only machzik for 1 year, that's not a chazakah. So seemingly the Mishnah, which says that you're going to be obligated to pay arba v'chamisha, you're going to be obligated to pay four times or five times, even if there are two different sets of edim testifying about the Geneva on the one hand and the Tzvichu Mechira on the other hand, that would seem to be against Rabbi Akiva. That would seem to constitute a chatzi davar for Rabbi Akiva, and he should not obligate you to pay arba v'chamisha. So that was the question the Gemara posed, Lema masnisin delok Rabbi Akiva. Perhaps this Mishnah is not in accordance with Rabbi Akiva. Amar Abaye afilu tema Rabbi Akiva. Abaye says, no, you misunderstood. This Mishnah could even accord with the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Why? Milo moda Rabbi Akiva, b'shnayim omrim kidesh, b'shnayim omrim ba'al. This is going to be a long statement. Da'afagav de'ede bia tzricha de'ede kidushin. Kevan de'ede kidushin, lo tzricha de'ede bia, davar karina bay. Does Rabbi Akiva not agree in the following case? Let's say you have two edim who are testifying that a woman became engaged, became niskadeshes, to a certain person. And then two other edim are testifying that a different man had relations with this woman. So they're testifying that he had relations with an Ashes Ish. And we would say that in such a case, according to Rabbi Akiva, even though the Edei Bia need the Edei Kiddushin, even though the second edim who testified that this woman had relations with a person who was not her husband need the first edim who testified that this woman was married, because otherwise the second testimony of the edim who say this woman had relations is insignificant. If the woman was never married, then it's not really consequential that she had relations with some other man. Granted, they should be married and she's only a pnuya, but that's not an offense which is punishable in halacha. So even though the second edim who testify about the relations need the testimony of the first edim who testify about the kiddushin, about the engagement, about the marriage, kevan de edi kiddushin lo tzrichan edi bia davar karinabe. Since the first edim who are testifying about the marriage don't need the edi bia, they don't need the second set of edim who are testifying about the relations, because that's irrelevant to their testimony. At the end of the day, they're testifying that the woman became engaged, she became married, and that's a significant matter. That's a davar in halacha. So Rabbi Akiva would hold in such a case that even though the second Edim need the first Edim, since the first Edim don't need the second Edim, then both testimonies are considered a davar. Not only is the first testimony of the Edim testifying about the Kiddushin considered a davar, but even the Edim testifying about the relations who are dependent on the first kat of Edim are still testifying about a davar. We consider that a davar and not a chatzi davar. So Hachanami, the same should be true according to Rabbi Akiva, who has this shita of davar v'lochatzi davar. The same should be true in the case of our Mishnah. Af agav de eidei tficha tzrichi le'eidei gneva. Even though the eidim testifying about the shechting, or the sale, need the eidei gneva, even though those eidim need the testimony of the people who say that the person stole the animal, because otherwise it's irrelevant that he shechted the animal or sold the animal. Even though that second group of eidim is dependent on the first group of eidim, kaven de eidei gneva lo tzricha le'eidei tvicha davar karina bei. Since the first eidim who are testifying that you stole the animal don't need the second eidim who are testifying that you shechted it, and again I'm adding or that you sold it, davar karina bei. We consider it a davar. We consider that these eidim are testifying about a full matter. So Rabbi Akiva could really agree with our Mishnah. He could really say that you are obligated to pay arba l'chamisha even if you have separate eidim testifying about the gneva on the one hand and the tvicha u'mechira on the other. So then the Gemara asks, well, we now sort of understand Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva holds davar velo chatzi davar, but he would agree in the case of Eidei Kiddushin, Eidei Bia, or in the case of Eidei Gneva, Eidei Tficho Mechira, that that's still considered a davar. So now the Gemara asks, well, what about the Rabbanan? The Rabbanan, hai davar velo chatzi davar, lemiute mai. In what case would the Rabbanan say that the testimony of the Eidim is considered a chatzi davar and is not significant? Meaning, if the Rabbanan, let's say for the Rabbanan who said that a chazaka, where different Eidim are testifying about each year works, then in which case would they say that it's considered a chatzi davar and their testimony is invalid, it's incomplete, it's not testifying about a whole matter? So Gemara says, that's lemiute echad omer echad begaba, ve'echad omer echad bekreis. The situation in which the Rabbanan would say the testimony is invalid is if you have one aid testifying about a woman that she had one hair, bigaba, on, Rashi says, Seyar ra'iti bekishrei etzbe oseha, that I saw hair on the knuckles of her fingers, and you have a different aid testifying that he saw hair on the girl, on the woman's stomach. What's going on here? Basically, the eidim who would be testifying are trying to establish that a woman is a gedola, that a woman is mature, and the way we do that is by testifying that she has two hairs, seemingly on her body. And so the Gemara is saying that the Rabbanan would consider it a chatzi davar if you had one aid testifying that there was one hair on her knuckles and you have a different aid testifying that she had one hair on her stomach. That those two aidim cannot combine to establish that this girl is a gdola, even though they're testifying that she has two hairs. Since each one is testifying only that she has one hair, at the end of the day we consider that a chatzi davar. They're not testifying that she's a gdola. And that edus would be invalid. The Gemara just says, though, that that makes no sense. Hai chatzi davar v'chatzi edus hu. This case is not only chatzi davar, where they're each testifying about half a matter, they're each only testifying about one hair, but it's also chatzi edus. You only have one aid testifying about each hair. So, of course, that's going to be invalid, because it's not only half a matter, they're only testifying about one hair, but it's also only partial edus, you only have one aid. So the Gemara says, El Lemiuti Shnayim Omrim Echad Begaba, Veshnayim Omrim Echad Bekresa. So really the case that the Rabbanan would exclude on the basis of Davar Velo Chatzi Davar, that it's only a partial testimony, is if you have two Eidim testifying that she has one hair on the knuckles of her hands, and two Eidim testifying that she has one hair on her stomach. In such a case, you would have a full Eidus, you would have two Eidim testifying about each matter, but it would not be a full davar, it would only be a chatzi davar. They're each only testifying about one hair. And the Gemara just clarifies, Hani amri ktanahi, v'hani amri ktanahi. Both sets of eidim are testifying that she's still a ktana. The eidim are testifying that they saw one hair on her knuckles. They're saying, I saw one hair, and that means she's a ktana because she doesn't have two hairs. And the other eidim are testifying, I saw she has one hair on her stomach. That's also testimony that she's a ktana because at the end of the day, they're saying, I didn't see two hairs on the stomach. So in such a case, the Rabbanan would say, chatzi davar, that's only half a matter, and this eidus would be no good.
So the Rabbanan, do we accept the Eidus to say that she's a Tana?
Yeah, but the question is why... Right, I see you're saying. They're trying to establish her as a Gdola, so we're not accepting that. But there could be circumstances in which maybe it would be beneficial for her to be a Tana. So would we accept their Eidus that she's a Tana, or would we say, Lachomra, you have to assume she's a Gdola? I think the pashtus is we would assume she's really a Tana. And even if that works out to be a kula for her, like let's say she's not punishable for something.
She's a chazaka.
Right, she has a chazaka. So, yeah, Moshe's saying it would be insignificant anyway. But
she has two eidim that say she's a tana, and it's not contradicted by anybody.
Right, so she's still... No, but I think what Moshe's saying is we don't even need the testimony that she's a tana, because we have a chazaka that she is a tana. Meaning so long as she hasn't turned into a gdola, she hasn't grown these two hairs, we'd assume she's a tana anyway. So we don't necessarily need testimony that she's a Tana. But no, like Rudy's pointing out, I think we wouldn't say that she's you know, Aktana l'chumra and Agdola l'chumra. We accept the testimony if it's going to make her punishable, but we don't accept the testimony if it's going to allow her to do something like Lakula. Like to, you know. So I think that would still be true, but it could also work on the basis of the chazaka. Yeah, do we have
so, yeah, so the Rabbanim would also agree in the case of the property, where the person has three sets of witnesses, each one testifying to 1 year, the Rabbanim would also agree that that would be a chatzidavar.
No, that should be because the ones that testify in the first year don't need the ones for the second year.
But that's inconsequential.
No, so it is inconsequential. I think when the Gemara says Rabbanan, we're referring specifically to those Rabbanan who thought it would be good. So meaning everybody agrees to the principle of davar velo chatzi davar. The question is just what constitutes davar velo chatzi davar.
Right. So
Rabbi Akiva
different?
Said that the case of the chazaka is no good. The Rabbanan clearly said it was good. So then the Gemara asks, according to the Rabbanan, what case wouldn't be good? So the Gemara said, a case that wouldn't be good is you have two Edom testifying about the hair on the knuckle. Yeah.
How does the witnesses for the property differ? How does that differ from the witnesses for the hair?
Yeah, so it's a good question.
Each one of them is only saying no. She's not a gedola. In the case of the hair, each one is saying she's not a gedola. In the case of the witnesses for the property, each one is saying it's not a chazaka yet. It's not a chazaka.
Yeah.
Seemingly, they're the same thing.
Right. So that's a great question. The Rishonim are going to have to deal with that question. But it's clear in the Gemara that according to the Rabbanan, it would work. And the case that wouldn't work is Echa B'Gabba, Echa B'Kreisa. Tosos, though, deals with your question. Let's just see a little bit to get some insight. Tosos, Dibur Machal Mi'ute, Shnaim Omrim Echad B'Gabba. Second Tosus on the page. Tosus says, the Rabbanan say that this case, Shnayim Omer Recha Begaba, two Edom are testifying, she has one hair on her knuckles, two Edom testifying about hair on the stomach. That case is not going to work. That's Chatzi Davar. But these Rabbanan said that the Chazaka case, which Moshe is referring to, would work. So says Tosus, Velo Dami L'Shana Rishona Bifnei Shnayim. It's not comparable to the case of the Chazaka, where two Edom are testifying about the first year, two Edom are testifying about the second year, and two Edom are testifying about the second year. Why not? The Hasam Rau Kol Masha Hayu Yechol Niros Be'ot Shana. In the case of the Chazaka, the Edom are testifying about each year, testified about everything they could have possibly seen during the year in which they were observing this field. Meaning, if you're only watching a field for 1 year, so all you can see, the maximum you can see, let's say, is that a person was being machzik. So we don't require the Edom to testify about all 3 years. It even suffices to have Edom testifying about each year, because at the end of the day, they're making a complete testimony. You could say it's still a davar, even though it's not a halachically significant davar, but it's still a full matter.
It encompasses everything.
It encompasses everything. Whereas, if the Edom only saw one hair, they didn't see everything they could have seen. They could have seen two hairs. Maybe there weren't two hairs there, but in theory, they could have seen two hairs, and they didn't. They don't have testimony about two full hairs.
They're only testifying about a fraction of her body.
Right. They're only testifying about a fraction of her body. So that's the difference between these cases. Tosus goes on to see the to quote the Rif. I'm sure others have shown and deal with this question, but that's at least an initial distinction between these two. Yeah. Is that in the case of the field, the Edom saw everything they could have possibly seen. In the case of the Echa Begaba Echa Bekreis, the one hair on her knuckles and one hair on her stomach, the Edom didn't testify about the maximum that they could have seen. Now the Gemara goes on to discuss the case in the Mishnah, various cases, but specifically the case of Ganav Umachar B'Shabbos, that you stole the animal and sold it on Shabbos, even though it's Shabbos and you shouldn't have sold it because of the Isser of Shabbos, or you shouldn't have shechted it if that were the case also. Nonetheless, the Mishnah assumes that you're chayav. Hey, Arba
B'Chamisha. What's the Isser of selling something on Shabbos?
So the pashas, the Isser of selling something on Shabbos, the Mishnah in Beitza, the Daflam above and Beis, tell us that sales on Shabbos is a problem. It's only Xer Darabanan, though, because of Mekach
HaMimpo. That's why you're chayav.
That's why, right. That's so I think that's the simple explanation of why you're chayav. You'd be chayav because you didn't do an Isser Daraisa.
It's not going to be common dominate.
And that's why the Gemara, the Mishnah specifically did not say a case of Tavach in this case. It said Ganavu Machar B'Shabbos. But maybe you shouldn't be chayav. V'atanya Pater, the Gemara says. We have a braisa which says that you should be Pater from paying Arba B'Chamisha. So how do we reconcile these differences? Like Rudy's pointing out, the Isser of selling is only Darabanan, like Moshe's pointing out. Therefore, that's why you're chayav. So how do we understand the braisa which says you're Pater? Amar Rabbi Marchama, Kitanya, he did Pater. But Omer lo, akut te'ena, mitainasi, v'tikni li gnevusach. A little bit complicated, but what Rabbi Marchama says, the case of the braisa which says you're Pater is a case where the person who's buying your object from you, this object that you stole, is telling you, pick something. The person who's buying is telling you, pick from my fig tree, and I will be kone.
The other way around. The person selling is saying, pick from my fig tree, and you'll be kone through that. The buyer will get what he... The buyer is getting it, so he has to be kone. The seller is saying, pick a fruit from my tree, and thereby be kona the object.
No, the buyer.
No, I think that buyer. It seems intuitive. The buyer here. The
buyer is selling?
Yeah.
The buyer
has to pay.
Yeah.
The buyer has to pay, right? So the buyer says, take my field.
Right, exactly. The buyer has to pay. So the buyer is saying, you should pick from my field. And in the value of whatever you pick from my field, I'll be kone your gneva. That'll be my payment. So how does that help? Because when you're selling the object, the way that you sell it is by picking from the fig tree, and that creates material value that the person is transferring to you in exchange for your object. But when you pick from the tree, you're over an iser of kotzer on Shabbos. You're over an iser of harvesting on Shabbos. And since you're harvesting, that's an iser del raisa, in which case we would say, kam labib d'ramimine, since you're obligated to die for picking from the fig tree on Shabbos, you're pater for paying arba v'chamisha. That's the case of the braisa, which says you're pater. Amri v'kevan d'chitava le'kaman bedina, the Gemara says there's a problem with this case. We can't understand the Braisa like that. Why not? Because if the person who owns the fig tree were to claim, were to tell the person, I'm taking you to court, you have to pay me for the figs that you took from my fig tree, we wouldn't say that he has to pay. Why would he not have to pay for the figs? Even though he was given permission to pick the figs, the reason he doesn't have to pay is because he's obligated to die for having picked on Shabbos. He's mischayev ben afsho, therefore kama ben ramimine, he wouldn't have to pay for the figs that he took. And therefore, it's not really a mechira, there isn't really a monetary obligation here. You wouldn't have to pay the person back for what you did. Therefore, it's not as if he's giving you money for it, and it's not a mechira. So it's not utvacho, mecharo. We can't say that this is even a case where you sold the object, but you'd be pater because of kama ben ramimine. Seemingly, this doesn't fit the parameters of the Torah. El amar of papa, the Omer lo zrok gnevosecha lechatzeri v'tikni li gnevosecha. Rav Papa says we have to change the case. The case is where the person who's buying the object, so to speak, again, says to the person who stole it, throw your gneva into my chatzer, and in the throwing of the gneva, I'll be kone the gneva in my chatzer. So now there isn't a monetary obligation that's emerging from the, you know, the picking of the figs, but what's happening is you're being over the Isra Hotzah on Shabbos at the time that you're selling it. You're transferring it over to this other person, and in so doing, you're being chay of Hotzah. So again, we would say, you were over an Isra D'Raisa on Shabbos of Hotzah, and that's why you're going to be pater from paying Arba V'Chamisha. But then Gemara asks, well, according to whom does that Ukimta make sense? Come on, Rabbi Akiva, the Amar Kluta Kamisha Unchadamya? Is that assuming like Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva holds in Hilchos Shabbos, and potentially in other contexts, I guess, also, that Kluta Kamisha Huncha, that something which is absorbed by an area, is considered as if it's already landed in that area. So if you throw something into another Rishus, even though it has not yet landed in that Rishus, once it's in the airspace of that Rishus, we consider it as if it's landed. So that would work out really well. Why? Because as soon as the object that you're throwing, the object that you stole, which you're throwing, crosses into the other person's chotzer, even once it's in the airspace, at that moment, you're both over the Isra Hotzah, because it's as if the object has landed, and the person has been kona the object, and that has constituted a mechira. So that would only make sense according to Rabbi Akiva. The Ikir Rabbanan, because if it followed the position of the Rabbanan, who assumed Kluta Lav Kamisha Unchadamya, that something absorbed in the airspace is not as if it's landed, Kema Dematya Lechotzer Beita Okana, the Indian Shabbos Lomachayev Adematya La'ara. According to the Rabbanan, who assume Kluta Lav Kamisha Unchadamya, as soon as the object gets into the airspace of the person's chatzer, he would be kona the object, and it would be as if you sold it. But in Shabbos, you wouldn't be chayav for Hotzah until the object lands. So it wouldn't be kama b'derabimine, because they didn't happen at the exact same time. So how do we understand this? This is a great ukimta, but it only works according to Rabbi Akiva. It doesn't work according to the Rabbanan. So answers the Gemara, yeah, according to the Rabbanan, you'd have to understand it as the Omer lo tikni li gnevusecha ad shetanuach. The case would have to be that the person who's being kona the object says, I won't be kona it until it lands. According to the Rabbanan, who assumed kluta lav kamisha unchadamya, you would have acquired the object once it's in the airspace. You would have acquired the object once it's in the airspace of the chatzer, but you wouldn't have been over an Isser Shabbos until the object lands. So we have to make an ukimta, we have to make a specification in this case that you stipulated and you said, I don't want to be kona the object until it lands. Therefore, when the object lands, you're both kona the object and you're over an Isser Hotzah, and the person is over an Isser Hotzah on Shabbos, that's considered a mechira, that's a sale, and also an Isser Shabbos, commonly Rabine, that's why you'd be pater for paying Arba V'Chamisha. So that's how we'd have to understand it according to Rav Papa. Now Rava says, Rava Amar, Olam Karami Barchama. Really, you can understand the case as being the case of the figs, where the person who's buying the object says, pick from my fig tree, and for the value of the figs that you're picking, I'll be kona the gneva. And even though there was the issue of you're not going to be obligated in court, so there isn't really a financial obligation here, Rava says, we can understand the case of Rami Barchama based on the case of Etnan Zona. Says Rava, Etnan Asra Torah, Va'afilu Ba'al Ima. The Torah says that you're not allowed to bring an animal as a korban if the animal was given over as payment, essentially, to a zonah, to a prostitute. If you used it as payment for relations, you wouldn't be allowed to bring such a korban. And Rava says, Etnan is Asr, even if you had relations with your mother, and you gave an animal to your mother as payment for the relations. But that seems to run into the same problem that we had with the case of Rami Bar Chama. Why? Because Rava says, "V'tabale kaman bedina mi'amrinan leikum havla etnan." If your mother, who you had relations with, came to Beis Din and said, "You owe me this etnan, which you promised me," we wouldn't obligate you to pay your mother that etnan. Why not? Because you're mischayev ben afsho. You did an iser, which is punishable by death, because you had relations with your mother. So if she brought you to court, we wouldn't require you to give her an animal. And even though if she brought you to court, we wouldn't require you to give her the etnan, nonetheless, when you give her the etnan, it's still treated as etnan zona. It's still treated as an animal, which you can't bring to the Beis HaMikdash, even though there's no financial obligation that's related to it. And therefore, the same is true in the case where you picked from the fig tree, where the person couldn't bring you to court, we wouldn't obligate you to pay him if he came to court because you're mischayev ben afsho. Nonetheless, afal gav de leinyan tashlum nitava bedina kaman lo amrinan leizel shlim. So too in this case of the fig tree, even though when it comes to monetary payment, if he were to bring you to court, we wouldn't obligate you to pay him. Nonetheless, afilu hachi kevan de kamakni lebahachi havia mechira. Nonetheless, since you're giving him the object that you stole as a sale through such a transaction, that would still be considered a mechira. That would still be considered a sale. You would have a sale and an Isra Shabbos at the same time, and that's why you'd be pater from paying arba v'chamisha. Okay, we'll hold on over here.
Thank you very much.